We're continuing Parshat Bo. So the Jews are eating the Paschal offering, ready to go. Everyone's dressed. And on that night, Hashem passes through Mitzrayim, and we have the plague of the firstborn. So did we discuss the Medrash, that the firstborn became sick at midnight? It says in the beginning of Masechet Simachot, we have a tractate, one of the minor tractates, not printed in Shas Mishnayot. They're called Masechtot Ketanot. So in the opening lines, one of the tractates is called Masechet Smachot. It deals with the laws of mourning. So it says over there, the opening braita is Hagoses Areu Kachai Lechol Davar. Do we know what a goses is? Goses is a person that's almost dead. He's on the verge of dying. He's going to die. So a goses says he is on the verge of dying. So it says we treat him like he's alive for everything. You don't start cleaning him off for burial while he's still alive. You don't shut his eyes. You don't lie him on the floor so his body should stay cool. Right? No, but it's also important because it has halachic relevance to other things. That you cannot kill him.
You can kill him by starting
to breathe. No, it says we don't do a lot of things. It says he's considered like he's alive, so if his dad dies, he inherits him. You don't say, well, let's see who's the next in line. He's still around. He's alive. And it has many. His wife can't marry someone else. You know, now that this is relevant because sometimes a guy's a vegetable in the hospital. You know, he's what they call a vegetable. His heart is functioning. He can't move. So this idea that a goses, a person that his body is deteriorating and he's on the verge of dying, but he's alive. So then that means his wife cannot remarry. He can't divorce her, and he's still considered alive. Meaning this halacha has a lot of relevance. So introducing this halacha, Masechet Tzmachot quotes says the following medrash: what happened at midnight in Mitzrayim? So the Braisa says at midnight in Mitzrayim, all the firstborns became gosesim. The firstborns all became on the verge of death. They were lying on their beds, croaking away, crying, wailing. They're in pain. They're about to die, but they're not yet dead. And they spent from midnight till the crack of dawn that way, until the morning when they died. So Makat Bechorot really took place from midnight till the morning. It wasn't just one split second they all died. That's what Masechet Tzmachot teaches us. Ki ameru kulanu meitim, we're all dying. It doesn't say we're all dead. What does it say? Vayibachatzi alayla, Hashem hikachol v'chor be'etz Mitzrayim. Hashem smote every firstborn. Doesn't say what happened. But he tzaka gedola b'mitzrayim, ki ein bayit asher ein sham met. So that sounds like they were dead. Okay, they did die, but they weren't yet dead according to Masechet Tzmachot. So the Medrash says the dogs came charging into the Egyptian houses where they would bury their firstborn in the house, and the dogs would come in and start digging and digging out the bodies of the firstborn. And we have to pause for a sec. Another thing that happens at midnight is that the different idols all around Egypt start self-destructing. The metal ones start melting, the wooden ones start rotting. Every idol they're going to look at is self-destructing. And Hashem gives us the mitzvos of the holidays at this point. So we are masters of time. We have the mitzvah of the month, setting up the calendar, we discussed on Monday night. And we have mitzvot of Yamim Tovim. So Hashem tells us, you will commemorate this day. We're still in Mitzrayim. We're holding 14 days before Pesach, and Hashem tells us, you will celebrate Pesach, and you will still commemorate this day as a day of celebration in honor of Hashem for generations to come. How do you celebrate it? For 7 days, you will eat matzah. We rule that there's no mitzvah to eat matzah 7 days. You have a mitzvah to eat matzah on the first night, and the rest of the time, you could eat potatoes, you could eat other stuff. Okay, watch the matzahs, the Torah says. How do we watch the matzahs? So what is matzah? Matzah is flour and water. That's it, setu. What does the flour have to be made out of? One of the five grains. The five grains can become chametz, so only the five grains which can become chametz can make matzah. How do we make matzah? We take flour, we take water, we mix them, we make dough, we make the dough into a flat, like pita, like a flat pancake, and then we put it in the oven. The only problem is if you're going to do that, then in the oven it will separate. So we make holes in it so that the heat can penetrate without causing it to separate and blow up. So we make holes in the matzah. All of this takes place in under 18 minutes, so it doesn't have time to ferment. Torah tells us, in this period, you may not have chametz in your possession. So we get rid of all chametz before Pesach. That means we clean out our pockets. We clean out our bags. People today save a lot of bags because bags cost money. So I had an interesting thing today. I brought a bag with bottles. And I brought the bottles to someone. And then after I finished emptying out the bottles on the bottom of the bag, I found kabukim, a bag of kabukim. So got to check your bags. Got to check your suits. Sometimes you're in shul and they threw candies and you pocketed one. So we check our suit pockets, right? You know, yeah, could be. We have to check, we have to get rid of, if you have a vacuum cleaner, get rid of the bag of the vacuum cleaner. Get rid of the garbage bags. People sometimes toss comments into the garbage. And then they forget that before Pesach, I got to get rid of that garbage bag. So we clean really well. So the garbage bins are outside our possession, right?
Yeah, it's not your, it's the city's possession.
So that's okay. We have to take care when we purchase food for Pesach to make sure we don't buy chametz. Very often on the shelf you have the same product, kosher for Passover or not kosher for Passover, and you if you didn't check each one, you don't notice. You're buying 20 of something. You don't notice that 18 of them are kosher for Passover, but on the same shelf, there were also bottles that were not kosher for Passover. This happened to us 1 year. And so we decided, my wife and I, that we have a checking system. Whoever takes the item off the shelf, the other one has to check that everything they bought is kosher for Pesach. We check ourselves. If I did the shop, she checks my shop. If she did the shop, I check the shop. But when the food comes into the house before we bring it in, the other party is going to check to make sure that you didn't miss one of the items. You bought 20 salts, 20 packages of salt. One of them might not be kosher for Pesach. So you'll tell me what could be wrong with salt. And the answer is that the enzyme that they use to keep the salt from congealing, from coagulating, from becoming into rock, into solid pieces, the enzyme they use is very often derived from wheat. So you have things that are very much chametz in standard salt, if you didn't buy salt that's kosher for Pesach. Sugar, we all know how sugar is made. Sugar is made from beets. Yeah, the sugar you buy, the white sugar you buy today is made from beets, not from sugar cane. So every item you buy, you have to do a little bit of homework and make sure it's kosher for Pesach. There are items that don't need a kosher for Pesach symbol. The floor cleaner you buy doesn't need to say kosher for Pesach. The dish cleaner doesn't need to say kosher for Pesach. The toilet bowl cleaner doesn't need kosher for Pesach. Toothpaste, we run into the question of whether it's edible or not. Mouthwash, we run into the question whether it's edible or not. I got an interesting email the other day. I said in class a few months ago that there are halachic opinions that say that mouthwash is edible because alcoholics drink it. And I got an email from someone who told me that they were actually in charge in an institution. And one day a shipment came of mouthwash. And as they were about to deliver it, their boss caught them and said, "You're not delivering that." He said, what's wrong? It's mouthwash. And he said, yeah, one person ordered so many bottles of mouthwash. That's an alcoholic who's bought it in order to sneak into the institution alcohol. You're not delivering it. So someone who heard the class emailed me and told me it's true. It's true. What the halakhic authorities wrote, that alcoholics will drink mouthwash, it's true. It's drinkable. He said he himself saw it.
What kind of institution was this?
I don't remember.
Okay. Makes me wonder if...
Probably happened by you too.
It was, anyway, yeah.
You're saying it was a prison? I don't think it was a prison.
Okay.
I don't think it was a prison.
You said the name.
I don't remember...
Okay.
I don't remember the name of the institution. I don't remember the... I think it was an old age home.
Okay.
That's what I think he wrote me, that he was in charge of the front desk of an old age home.
Oh, hello.
And that's what was going on there. We move on. So things that we ingest or things that go into our mouth, we should make sure that they have a kosher for Pesach symbol. When I was a kid, there were marshmallows that we'd always buy for Pesach. And then one year we found out that the rabbi whose signature was said kosher for Pesach had died 20 years earlier. And the company kept on just publishing Rabbi so-and-so kosher for Passover. So you have to buy from a hechsher, you know. It's not enough that it says on it Rabbi so-and-so. Make sure he's alive, right? Make sure it's a hechsher. Make sure it's a hechsher. You know what you're eating. So on Pesach, we have to be careful. We don't always notice what's where chametz can come up. You buy tuna, you don't pay attention that the tuna has oil in it, and the oil can be chametz. You buy ice cream, you don't pay attention that it might be cookies and cream. And even not cookies and cream, there you have to make sure the ingredients are kosher for Pesach, which we really can't do. That's why today the things are so sophisticated. Even sugar is not what we think it is. Salt isn't what we think it is. So today we have to have kosher for Passover symbols. There were years when they would use flour to separate between the paper plates. That if you bought paper plates, you're buying paper plates with a little bit of flour to make sure they don't stick to one another. So then if you're eating salad on that plate and your salad liquid juice is mixing with the flour, you have chametz fermenting on that plate. Today, at least the last few years, they have not been doing that. You have to be on top of it a little bit to make sure. When you buy matzos, you should check your matzos, especially the hand matzos, before Pesach. We had a student once who worked in a matzah factory, and he described it like this. He was responsible for weeding out the problematic matzos. He said, you're standing in front of the line, and basically the way it works is there's this big machine that makes dough the breadth of this table or even more. And it goes down an assembly line, and it's cut. There's an oven that's bigger than the size of this room that it comes out of on the assembly line, and he's standing at the end. And now the matzos are just coming in and going into their trays in which they will be packed. He is following every second. About 12 matzos are coming off the rack, right? 12 matzos every second. He caught that one, he didn't see that one. Meaning, even if he's doing his job, he's a God-fearing person, and he's doing his job as best as he can. He said there's no way he could be on top of so many matzahs at the same time. This is also in hand matzahs. Those of you who will come with me, you'll see that the hand matzahs come out at a very fast pace. And by the time you're checking two, the next two are already out. You're going to check the next two are already out. At some point, it's very hard to keep up. It's our responsibility when we buy hand matzahs to take them out of the box before Pesach, make sure we don't have a matzah that's bloated, make sure we don't have a matzah that's folded over, because where it's folded over, it doesn't bake well. We have to make sure that our matzahs are kosher for Passover. The hand matzahs is where it gets more complicated. We'll discuss these laws on the day we go on the trip, so we always have a class first for 45 minutes on the laws of how to bake matzahs, and then we go and see it. Let's move forward. The Torah says, "Ushmartem et hamatzot." Watch the matzahs. Of course you watch the matzahs. What's the Torah telling us? It's telling us we have to watch it for the sake of the mitzvah. So that's why we say the Shem Matzos Mitzvah. I'm watching the matzos for the sake of the mitzvah. We draw the water for the mitzvah. We grind the wheat for the sake of the mitzvah. We bake it for the sake of the mitzvah. We do it all for the sake of the mitzvah. The Torah tells us we have a mitzvah on the night of Pesach to eat matzah. And that's what we do. How much matzah must we eat? The volume of an olive. How big is an olive? So we're not sure if our olives today are representative, or once upon a time the olives were bigger, and there are sources that seem to indicate they were double the size of our olives. So we try to eat the size of two olives. How big is that? You estimate. Look at good size olives when you go to the shuk, and figure twice that. Yeah, an olive about this big. That's a kazayas. So we eat twice that on Pesach. How much is that? Bezrat Hashem, in our model seder. In 2 months, we do a model seder. Before the break, the last Thursday night, is a model seder, and we will explore, we will experiment and see that. Okay, the Torah tells us the mitzvah of Yom Tov. So, what's the mitzvah of Yom Tov? Why? How is Yom Tov different than Shabbos? On Yom Tov, you're allowed to prepare food that on Shabbos you're not allowed to. So which tasks are we allowed to do on Yom Tov and which are we prohibited? So we have an order of tasks, right? We plant the kernel in the field. And then we plow the field so that the water will hit the kernel. Then we water the field. And then we harvest it. And then we thresh it. We break the kernel off of the stalk, and then we break the chaff off of the kernel, and then we throw the kernel into the air, and the wind blows away the chaff, and the kernel stay there. And then we bring animals, and we break it further, and then we grind it into flour, and then we sift the flour, and then after all that, we knead it, right? All the tasks up to kneading are prohibited on Yom Tov. From kneading the dough onward is permitted on Yom Tov. So a person can't say, well, I need to eat on Yom Tov, so I'm going to plant myself some, I'm going to water my garden on Yom Tov because I need to eat. You're not allowed to do that. I'm going to pick the weeds tonight, so tomorrow morning I'll have vegetables without weeds. You're not allowed to do that. I'm going to pick the fruit off the tree. I'm going to eat a fresh apple on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to do that, but I want to eat it. It says you're allowed to do work for eating on Yom Tov. From the task of kneading the dough onward. Picking a fruit is like harvesting the wheat. I'm not allowed to do that. So if I have fresh nana growing in my backyard and I want to make myself nana tea, I have to harvest it before Yom Tov. I'm not allowed to harvest on Yom Tov. I'm not allowed to pick fruits off the tree on Yom Tov. So what tasks are permitted? From the task of kneading onward. So I'm allowed to knead dough. I'm allowed to bake dough. I'm allowed to cook and bake on Yom Tov, right? Okay, so what's the difference? Why are these prohibited and these permitted? So Nachmanides explains, all the tasks up to kneading the dough are tasks which you do in mass. You don't plant yourself two kernels of wheat. You plant a whole field of wheat. You don't harvest two kernels of wheat. You harvest the whole field. You don't thresh or grind into flour unless you have in mass. So those are tasks which you always give your servants to do. You don't do them yourself. They're done in mass. When it comes to making bread, kneading the dough, you make one loaf of bread. You might do it for your husband. Even if you have servants doing other things, you might be the one kneading the dough and making the bread. It's not so. We commemorate on a Yom Tov. We say we're no longer slaves. We don't do the task that slaves, that only a slave would do, like plowing, like planting, like harvesting. But the task of kneading dough or baking, that's something even the masters do, right? Even wealthy people will knead their own dough or bake it. So that's why those are tasks we're allowed to do on Yom Tov. Okay, we have the mitzvah of telling our children the story. Right, we have the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Our kids are going to ask us, why are you doing this? It's really hard to be a Jew. Why are you doing this? And that's the wicked son. So Torah says, answer him. Tell him the story. Tell him how Hashem saved you. So here we have the first description. The Torah will describe four times how we have a mitzvah to tell our kids the story of Mitzrayim. And maybe we should add a point. Okay, what happens on the Seder night? Let's ask a different question. You're telling your kid Judaism is real. You're telling him, I'm telling you what my father told me, what his father told him. You're giving him the basis for all of Judaism on the Seder night. So the mitzvah the Torah gives us, tell them the story on the Seder night, is an important mitzvah. And it is our responsibility to make it fun and exciting. And that's what we're going to discuss in our model Seder, that on the Seder night, we have to make it come to life. Okay, we're up to Shishi. Midnight. Pharaoh's lying in bed. The Egyptians believe it's the safest night to be in Egypt. They are confident. Their God in heaven, the sheep and the zodiac, is most powerful tonight. And on that night, people start dying like flies. And all around Egypt, people are waking up to hear their firstborn wail and drop dead. And Pharaoh gets up. And throughout Egypt, you hear people crying and wailing. And Pharaoh says, what's going on here? We got to get Moshe and Aaron. Everyone's busy with their dead. Pharaoh's scared. He's a firstborn. He can tell everyone else that he's a god. But he knows the truth. And so Pharaoh gets nervous. And he starts running. And he goes into the Jewish quarter. And he asks the people, tell me, where does Moshe live? Where does Moshe live? The Jews aren't allowed to leave their house. He starts banging on doors. Tell me, where's Moshe? So they tell him from behind the closed door, go down the block and make a left. He goes down the block and makes a left. He starts banging on the doors. Where's Moshe live? They tell him, go back up the block and make a right. He says, but that's where I came from. They start sending him in circles all around Mitzrayim. And he's searching for Moshe and Aaron. And finally he finds them. And he says, get out, get out. I want you to leave. Take the Jews. Go worship Hashem like you said. Take your cattle. Take everything you said. Just pray for me. And the Egyptians turn on the Jews. And they say, we need you to leave. People are dying. It's all your fault. Get out. So the nation can't leave. Moshe tells Pharaoh, we're not leaving like thieves in the middle of the night. We're waiting till daybreak, when it's clear. And so daybreak comes, they don't have time to bake the morning bread. They take the dough on their shoulder. That's why we, on the Pesach night, we take the matzah, we put it over our shoulder. There's an ancient Sephardi tradition, you take the matzah, put it in afikoman, you put it in a pillowcase, put it over your shoulder, and say, this is how we ran out of Mitzrayim. And the Jews have all the gold and silver they borrowed from the Egyptians, and they start traveling. So they have 600,000 men and children and women, so they're close to 2 million. And they leave Mitzrayim. And a lot of Egyptians, a lot of different nations decided they want to join the Jews. And that's what the pasuk calls Erev Rav. Rav means many. Erev, a mixture of many different nations that wanted to join the Jewish people, join them as they left. And they have a lot of cattle. And they're leaving. So when I was a kid, I grew up with the following medrash. I don't know if it says it, where it says it, but this is what the Rebbe told us. The Jews were leaving Mitzrayim with the dough on their back, and the sun was baking it on their back in the heat of the sun. And in order for it not to become chametz, so the Egyptians were shooting arrows at them, and the arrows would keep hitting the dough. So the Jews carrying the dough on his back, and instead of him getting hit by the arrow, boom, another arrow goes into the matzahs. So the Rebbe in Cheder would tell us, when we look at the holes in the matzahs, we think how the Jews were being chased by the Mitzrim, and their matzahs ended up holy because those were the arrows that were meant for the Jew.
Holy people, holy bread.
Yeah. So that's the story I grew up on. They bake it into matzahs. And here we get an interesting reason. Why did they bake matzahs? Because they didn't have time to make real food. Wait a second, but before they left Mitzrayim, Hashem told them to eat matzah. So the simple answer is, yeah, Hashem foreshadows, right? Hashem tells us what's going to happen. But there's the Ibn Ezra quotes, there was once a rabbi who traveled to Egypt and they decided they wanted to toss him in jail. They got upset at him. They put him in jail. And while he was in jail, they made him work. And while he was working, they fed him matzahs. So when he got out, he said, maybe the Jews, all the time they were in Mitzrayim, were eating matzahs. Maybe it's an Egyptian thing, that when people are slaves, they feed them food that makes them not so full. When Jonathan Pollard was in federal penitentiary, so they said that when they visited him, they discovered that the federal penitentiary is always cold. It's always colder than you'd be comfortable because it wears down a person's drive.
Light.
Yeah? That I don't know. What? Has lights everywhere?
Light. You lose sleep, you don't see comfortable.
Oh, yeah?
And it's also security, they can always see you.
What?
Some turn them off. Depends. Sure, federal prison.
Military police in Israel don't turn them off. Light in the room on your face.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
So that's where we come up with this idea that matzah represents two things: the period of oppression and the period of redemption. Matzah represents both, because the Jews, that's the idea that Ibn Ezra brings from this story. They deduced that maybe that's why they were eating matzah, to commemorate the slavery and the freedom. And we will conclude with a story. There's a famous story, the Magen Midovna writes, there was once a man who was a peddler. Every week the kids would see him get up in the peddler's outfit and take his bag with all the different items he would peddle around town. And he would sell different items, needles and clothing and buttons, and then he'd come home at the end of the week and sometimes at the end of the month, and all the kids would jump over him, and he would bring home whatever he could make. And then fortune shined his way and he made a few excellent deals and he became super wealthy. And it was one day that was the turning point in his life, when he made his amazing deal, and he would celebrate that day. And every year on that day, he would take out his peddler's clothing and walk around the house, and the kids would come pouncing on him, and he would open his peddler's bag, and inside he'd have gifts for each child. And this is how it went for a few years, until finally one year his business started going down and down and down until he lost everything he had. And then he sat there with his wife and they were thinking, what are they going to do? And finally he said to her, look, I my whole life I was a peddler, I'll go back to peddling, and there's no choice. So they agreed, and the next morning he gets out his peddler's outfit and he takes out the bag, and the kids come and they jump on him and they hug him and they say, Abba, wow, today's the day, you got gifts for all of us. And he goes, no, today it's for real. Today I'm not here to give out gifts. Today I have to go back out as a peddler. So the Magen Midovna says that's a mashal for what's happening on the Seder night. On the Seder night, we take the matzah and we start the Haggadah all over again. And we hold the matzah at the beginning of the Haggadah and we tell the kid, Holach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread. This is, now we're going back to that. We're going back to as though we were in Mitzrayim, where we're going to relive it now, as though we were in Mitzrayim. That goes with this Ibn Ezra. When we were in Mitzrayim, we were eating poor man's bread. When we left Mitzrayim, that bread became the symbol of salvation. And now we eat that bread as a way of celebrating that we're no longer there. We start the Seder, we say this is where we were. We end the Seder, we eat the matzah to celebrate that we're no longer there. Redemption. We at the end of the parasha, the Torah says we were in Egypt 430 years. We have one verse that says 400 years, and we have a tradition that says 210 years. So the rabbi said we were physically there for 210 years. The 400 years God decreed on Avram, that was fulfilled from the time Yitzhak was born, it was considered we were in exile. We were able to fulfill the exile long before we went to Egypt, because Avram and Yitzhak lived in Israel as people in exile. They didn't act like owners of the land. And 430 years is from the time of the decree. So we can do the math. Let's leave it hanging. It should bother you, these numbers. When I was a kid, it really bothered me. So that deserves another class. But it should bother you. Okay, at the end of the parasha, the Torah calls the night of Pesach Leil Shimurim. Our tradition is that this has many meanings. One idea is that Hashem is watching over us on this night more than any other night. On the night of Pesach, we don't say all the verses of protection that we do every other night. On the night of Pesach, our tradition is that Hashem is giving us an extra watching. Hashem watched us. He wouldn't let us be harmed, even though everyone else in Egypt was getting harmed. Our sages say it also means Hashem's watching this night. Many great things happened in our history on this night, and many great things will still happen on this night.
Is Pesach anywhere here? Oh, I see right there. References
like, maybe we'll still get to that. I was a guest by a rabbi for the Seder. I would try to go to different rabbis for the Seder. I didn't have my parents here when I was in yeshiva. So I'd call rabbis and say, you know, I don't have parents here, I don't have siblings here. Maybe I can come to you for the Seder. And this way I got to see the Seder of different people. So I was by Rabbi Magnus, and I thought if I'm at the Seder, I should say Divrei Torah. And he would never let me say Dvar Torah. Every time I'd start, he'd say, you have a question? I'd say, no. He said, then we're going to go on. And then at some point, I said, you know, I have a Dvar Torah. And he said, tell me tomorrow. At the Seder night, our job is to ask questions, and the one who's leading the Seder will give answers. But our job isn't just to sit and say Divrei Torah. So your kids will come, and they'll have a lot of things they want to share with you, because they learned all kinds of Divrei Torah. And I guess that's also important, but it's not the main theme. The main theme is we should learn enough so that our kids can ask questions, and we will give answers. So on this night, we're supposed to give answers to the kids. We're supposed to feel like I got answers tonight. And that means we're not going anywhere. We sit with them, we learn with them, we talk to them, we listen to their questions, and we don't have to stick to the text of the Agadah. We say everything in the Agadah, but the focus of the night is conversation. And so we have to have that. And when the kids start asking questions, we shouldn't say, just a second, we've got to run ahead. Stop what you're doing, hear their questions, and try to answer them. We move on. There's a special mitzvah non-Jews cannot eat from the Paschal offering. You guys know the story in the Gemara about Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. A non-Jew came to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira was living in the city of Nitzivin. So he came to him and said, oh, you guys say that non-Jews shouldn't eat from the Paschal offering. I go up to the temple every year and I eat from the Paschal offering. Ha ha! So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira said to him, you're not getting the most important part, and that's why they're letting you eat from it, because they're not giving you the good part. So he said, what do you mean? He said, the tail, that's the best fat, and they never gave you the tail, right? He said, you're right. He says, you see, next time you go, you tell them that I said you should ask for the tail, and they should give you the tail. And you'll see if they'll give you the tail, because that's the best fats. You'll see, you won't get away with it. He says, why? He says, yeah, try, you'll see. If they give you from the tail, then you really got to eat from the Paschal offering. So the non-Jew goes up to the temple, and he partakes of the Paschal offering, and in the middle he says, hey, wait a second, you guys gave me meat, you didn't give me from the tail. They said, why would we give you from the tail? He said, the rabbi said you should give me from the tail. I'm not leaving without a piece of the tail. I gave money like everyone else. You got to give me a piece of the tail. So he said, really, which rabbi said you should have a piece of the tail? So he said, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira out in Nitzivin said I should have a piece. That's what he told you. Very interesting. So then they started researching him. They discovered he was a non-Jew. They killed him. Why'd they kill him? What if a non-Jew that eats from the Paschal offering gets the death penalty? Torah says, don't give it to non-Jews. It's your celebration of redemption. But why did they kill him? So there's a very interesting Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua writes, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira lived after the destruction of the temple. After the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, so the Romans didn't let us bring a Paschal offering. A Paschal offering of Korban Pesach can be brought even without a Beit HaMikdash, because you don't have to bring it on the altar. You can eat it without that. If we don't have an altar, we could still bring a Korban Pesach. So what was happening was, there was an underground Paschal offering being brought. And this is what Rav Ishtori Aparchi writes in his book, Aftor Vaferach, that years after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Jews would come up to the Beit HaMikdash on Pesach and bring a Korban Pesach. Because like Tosus writes in numerous places, the Jews had parts of the red heifer left long after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. For centuries afterwards, they still had the dust of the red heifer, and they were still maintaining the laws of purity. So you had pure Jews, and you had Jews who could eat from it. And if you don't have pure Jews, then Tumaut Abitzibu, we have a rule that if no one's pure, then you could eat the Korban Pesach even without anyone being pure. Special halacha. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira heard that a non-Jew had infiltrated the underground Paschal offering bringing that the Jews were doing under the Romans' noses. He said, if this guy's in, he could endanger everyone. So he said to him, that's why he tricked him. And that's why the second they discovered he wasn't Jewish, they said, oh no, if he lets the secret out, we're all dead. So it was either him or them. That's why they killed him, because technically he didn't deserve the death penalty for it. That's the Pnei Yoshua over there. So that's the mitzvah in our parsha, that a convert eats from the Paschal offering, but a non-Jew does not. We have many interesting halachot about converts and the eve of Pesach. I only understood these halachot ever since I came to Machon Meir, because I saw guys who were in the conversion process push real hard to get their conversion done before Pesach. Let me celebrate Pesach with my people. I want to finish before Pesach. And that's why the halacha actually discusses, we have a lot of halachot about a person who converts the eve of Pesach. And I never understood why. But then I saw how guys were so into it. There were so many guys who tried to get it done just before Pesach. Then I understood why the halacha has to give it so much attention. Yes, sir?
What happens to a Jew who converts to another religion?
No such thing.
You can't convert out of Judaism. You can think you're converting. That I know, but I didn't read somewhere. I read it. I can't remember where I read it. Where it says that the person who practices a Jew who practices another religion was not included in Egypt in eating the lamb.
Okay, maybe. He wouldn't live. It would seem that he wouldn't have lived if he didn't. Because remember, 4 out of 5 died. I don't know why he would have remained alive. Yes, sir.
What is the halakha for a person that is converting? Can he not partake?
He could. That's one of the most amazing things. The Torah tells us here that a person who converts to Judaism is like a regular citizen.
Converts.
Now that's a phenomenal thing. Converting. We're still in Egypt. We're still the underdog. We're still the slaves. And the Torah says, one day you're not going to be. And I want you to know that you have equal treatment. If a person wants to convert, he does the Paschal offering just like you. We have another interesting halakha here, and that is that someone who is not circumcised may not eat from the Pesach, Korban Pesach. Now this also includes someone who has a child who's not circumcised. They may not eat from the Korban Pesach. Special halakha for the Korban Pesach. And with that, we're up to Shvi, and I think we will pause here.